Listen to the Neil Prendeville Show wherever you go. Download the Go Loud app, the new home of Red FM.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Time is precious when you get to talk with a senior politician. I'm joined by the Taoiseach, Simon Harris. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome to Cork. I know you're on Lee's side today. With time ticking, I'm going to just jump right in because I'm just wondering, with regards to the state of the nation at the moment, are you aware of how frustrated and angry the public feels? How let down they feel by you, by the Taoiseach, by all politicians representing them? It comes to cost of living crisis, house prices, rent, energy arrears, food poverty, 17,000 people in emergency accommodation. Are you in tune with all of that?
I am indeed, and I'm working every day on every single one of those issues. But I'm also aware that there's other statistics alongside that as well, that there's more people working in our country than ever before, that wages are going up, that educational standards are increasing, the class sizes are going down, and indeed that we now, for the very first time in a long time, are seeing wage growth outstripping price growth. So for the first time in a long number of years, we're beginning to see some progress being made in terms of people's household incomes. But there's a lot of work to do, and in politics there's always a lot of work to do. And in elections, people decide who they think are the best people to advance those challenges.
That might be all very well on paper, but the reality of it is that cost of groceries have rocketed. Absolutely. There's a report out this morning, and this is for people who are going out trying to work in the morning, saying that one in seven is in arrears with their electricity. And much of that is on your watch because you withdrew, cruelly, the energy credits.
No, so there's a couple of different parts to that. I mean, firstly, what's not on our watch is the fact that we've lived through the greatest inflationary crisis in the European Union since the 1970s. And that had a real effect on all countries, including Ireland. We put in a number of measures to help people through that crisis, a number of one-off payments and the likes. We also said at the time of the last election, as inflation was falling, we had to move to more targeted payments. So instead of giving you an energy credit or me an energy credit, we expanded the fuel allowance. 460,000 people now benefiting from fuel allowance, more people than ever before. And I do take the point.
No, but the energy credit would have helped everybody. It wouldn't have been selective.
Correct. That's the point. But I don't mean to be rude about you, but should I get an energy credit or should you get an energy credit?
It was actually about the optics and about how people would feel. I mean, like, for instance,
you have to target the support sometimes, O'Neill, as well, because we have to make sure that the measures we take are sustainable. This idea of giving everybody an energy credit forevermore wasn't sustainable.
So was it a mistake to give them in the past then?
No, because we gave it at a time when inflation was double digits. Inflation is now falling. Inflation is going to fall again this year. And as I've said, we're now back, thankfully, at a position where wages are growing ahead of prices for the first time in a long time.
Listen, people go out to work in the morning, and if they're lucky enough to earn a decent enough income, they pay 41% tax on it. On top of that, they pay an 8% universal social credit. You're aware of the draconian taxation rates in this country, surely?
I am aware of the tax. I think people pay the higher rate of tax at too low a level. And since my party came to government, we've increased the amount that you can earn before you pay the higher rate. And I want to be very clear in taking up the role as finance minister that I've taken up in the last few months. I want to get back into a rhythm now of proper income tax packages for middle income earners. I do accept fully that there's a group of people who work their backside off and still feel at the end of the week that work hasn't paid enough. And the other issue I want to do is make sure their savings can work for them, because while you rightly say that there are cost of living challenges, and I don't deny that, we do have one of the best saving rates in the European Union, but that money is earning diddly squat for people in banks. We have to look at how we can use the tax system now to start making sure that savings are working for people. So that and a regular rhythm of income tax packages are going to be a priority for me.
What is a regular rhythm of income tax packages? What do you mean? Are you saying that you'd raise the ceiling for working families where they'd pay less tax on higher income?
Very fair question. So I'm not going to announce the budget today or I'll get into all sorts of trouble. But I am saying that what you've just said there is something that I think is a very effective way. We have, over the last number of years, on several occasions, raised the amount you can earn before you pay the higher rate of tax. I think it was about €35,000 not that long ago. It's now up to €44,000. And I do want to continue to increase that. So I think that is an effective, because that basically means if you work harder, if you earn, if you bob extra, if you get a promotion, if you do a bit of overtime, you shouldn't be giving the government a higher rate.
Why don't you just do that? I mean, when a budget comes along, you can put up the price of fuel and fags and drink, but why does it take so long?
Well, in fairness, we've over the last number of years, except the last budget. And in the last budget, we made a conscious decision, similar to what we did in 2020, that there were a couple of other tax measures that were really important. Reduced the VAT rate on everybody's energy bill for the next number of years. We're reducing the VAT rate for the hospitality sector from July, because that's supporting hundreds of thousands of people in work right across Cork and right across Ireland. And we also took the decision to reduce the cost on building apartments to get housing supply going. But what I'm saying to your listeners, who I know are frustrated, I really do know that, Neil, I hear that. What I'm saying to them is that that's a once-off rhythm of a budget. We're back now to a situation of keeping the economy running well and trying to help the squeeze middle, people who are working their backside off, keep a little bit more of their own money.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the latest developments with regards to something that kicks in next week, which is, as Sinn Féin would say, feathering the nests of developers and landlords and investment firms and vulture firms from overseas. You see, the company yesterday said that overnight they will see their profits on something like 3,000 rental properties in Ireland jump by 25%.
But they didn't say that, and I had to correct Sinn Féin and the Dáil on this yesterday. They said over 10 years that was a projection, and they went on national radio yesterday to ask Mary Lou McDonald to stop misrepresenting the
They
document.
Told their shareholders that were boom times ahead, though, words to that effect. All then, of course, on the watch of your government, where people, and the average price of a three-bedroom semi-D in Cork now is north of 400,000. The average price of a rental property in Cork now is actually every single rental property in Cork now is over 2,000 a month.
And let me just be really clear what we've done with this new rent bill. We brought in for the very first time an effective no-fault eviction ban. We brought in for the very first time a six-year tenancy. And not one person in a current rental agreement will see any change to their rental situation.
They will see it. They'll see their rent go up 2% a year. And then after 6 years, God knows what happened when the landlords are out to reset to market rent.
But Neil, you've never been able to talk to a politician before on this programme who's brought in a law that provides a six-year tenancy. It's never been done before. It's provided 6 years of certainty for renters that simply didn't happen before. And yes, housing is too expensive in this country, but we are now seeing almost 100 homes a day being constructed. We exceeded everybody's expectation and forecast last year in terms of number of homes being built. And we are now seeing around 600 first-time buyers every single week. There is a housing emergency in Ireland. Of that, there is no doubt. But this idea of the left and the Shinners and everybody else just thinking that you can drive out private investment. The state isn't the only person in the country or the only entity in the country that should be building houses. We need private investment as well. It can't just be taxpayers' money building local authority homes. They're important. They're needed. But we also need private investors building private homes for people to buy and rent. That's absolutely essential if we're to get people into their own homes.
Yeah, but a second now. Average people or average couples or individuals or families are bidding anyway against the government to hoover up properties. They're also bidding against these international massive corporations that are coming in, also hoovering up properties and driving prices north and driving our young people as a consequence out of the country, feeling let down, angry and bewildered and off in Australia. I mean, that's all on your watch.
I think it's important we don't in general statements speak for every single person in the country. There's lots of people in this country that see the progress that is being made. There's lots of people in this country that went out and voted for Fine Gael in the last election and Fianna Fáil and voted to put us in government because they recognise that the policies we're pursuing are the right policies for the country.
What policies? Yes, I mean, whose idea was it to cut SNA's crew? Absolutely.
But I'm just saying, people did vote. People did vote for our policy, so not everybody.
But that doesn't mean that they should put up and shut up. I mean, what's this business? How in the name of God could anybody come up with an idea to cut SNA assistant places in schools for the vulnerable and the most needy children? That's beyond cruel.
Well, that was completely botched, and it was immediately paused, and it was not proceeded with.
Whose decision was it?
I've been very clear. The book stops with us. If you're a parent of a child with special needs listening to this radio program today, the last thing you want to hear is me saying it was this officer, that officer, this official, that official. The buck stops with us. When things go well, we take the credit. When things go wrong, we have to put our hands up. We got this badly, badly wrong. And what we're going to do here, I'm the son of an SNA. I'm the brother of somebody who wouldn't have got through school without an SNA. What we're going to do here is get this system right. The rules that govern who gets an SNA were last written in 2014. They need to be updated because the care needs and the complexity of children in our school has dramatically changed since then. There's going to be more SNAs in Irish schools in September than ever before.
Sorry, the Examiner reports this morning that this crisis is far from over. The Examiner says there won't be enough school places to meet the substantial increases come September. Incidentally, where did you find the 19 million in additional funding that was needed to leave things alone?
Out of the 118 billion in voted expenditure, which includes a 1 billion euro contingency fund.
So you took it out of a rainy day fund or something, is it?
We set aside a billion euro out of 118 billion of public expenditure, and that's to allow for situations that arise during the year. And this is one such situation.
Okay, you wouldn't find that for average Irish people in fuel poverty or food poverty or the derisory tenor you'd give to senior citizens ever, no?
I don't accept that at all. I mean, we've increased the state pension, as you know, and we're increasing it each and every year, and we're increasing it above the rate of inflation. We've also increased the fuel allowance, and I've addressed to you what we're doing in relation to fuel poverty. Instead of giving it to people who don't need an energy credit, we're targeting it to those most in need.
Yeah, but if a pensioner's on 290 a week, say, for instance, if they're lucky, do you know how much a bag of coal is, say, a 40 kg bag of coal?
It can vary significantly, but I'm taking the points that you make in terms of you need to do more. Not off the top of my head.
Okay, well, if we said about 30, you should know these kind of things, they're important. About 32 euros, so an average pensioner could, in a very cold winter, go through two bags a week. That's like 65 euro. They're inside in their homes, putting on extra layers of clothing and going to bed early. They can't turn the heating on.
But Neil, you've made the point in relation to the cost of a bag of coal. I'd make the point that the fuel allowance that we're providing is now 38 euro a week. And we're providing that to 460,000 people right across the country to help those people. We've made decisions to increase support carers, support people with disabilities. We've increased every single social welfare payment to older people, people with a disability and carers. We're increasing the income disregard so more and more carers will qualify as well. So I reject out of hand any assertion that the government isn't prioritising those most in need. We absolutely are, day in and day out. And many, many people are benefiting from that. For example, only last week in Limerick, I announced a significant expansion to the Meals on Wheels system. Again, helping people, helping older people, helping people in their homes too. So we take decisions every day to try and help people. Government doesn't get everything right.
No, far from it. Because now I hear...
We do get some things right too, Neil.
It depends as to for whom you are speaking. I mean, the latest statistic on the amount of money you've spent on asylum seeker state spending is 1.2 billion for last year on top of 500 million to Ukraine. Is that acceptable? Those kind of numbers, I think you recently said that our immigration and asylum system is broken, isn't working, we need to fix it.
I did, and I said the numbers are too high. And I got absolutely piled on by everybody who tried to shut down the debate when I made what I thought was an honest point reflecting the views of people across the country. Migration's a good thing. There's many people in Cork and across Ireland who've come to our country, made it their home and are making a positive contribution to our economy and our society. I thank them for that. But we cannot ignore the fact, and I would refuse to be shouted down by people when I make the point that we do have a situation where at a time when there is pressure around housing supply and public services, we have to have a firmer approach in relation to migration. That if you don't have a right to be here and you've been through the system and you've lost an appeal, you do need to be deported. And I do support the measures being taken by the Minister for Justice in relation to that, because Irish people are very decent, they're very compassionate, they know the benefit of migration, they see it in the health service and lots of other places, but they also want to know that rules are applied.
But if you spent 1.2 billion last year, right? Yes. And over 80% of those that come here have their applications rejected. Can you see the anger and the frustration of the public then, where that money could have been spent an awful lot better? Or do you are you just as frustrated about that?
I can see a frustration from people across the country, particularly when they see the likes of state facilities or hotels or the likes being used. And they're saying, hang on a second, I'm compassionate, I'm a decent person, but I don't want to lose the local hotel in the town. I do think in fairness, and it is important to be fair, the number of people that we saw coming to our country significantly increased, and the government did have to respond in kind of an emergency manner. We need to now move from that emergency system to a much more planned system. If you have a right to be here, thank you for coming. You should be welcomed. You should be supported. You should be integrated. If you don't have a right to be here, you should be asked to leave. And if you don't leave, we need to make sure you leave. That's the sort of system people want to see. And that's not about, that's actually about making sure the centre holds in Irish politics, because if you leave a vacuum, it actually gets filled by extremes. So I feel quite strongly on this. We have to listen to people. We have to try and respond. But we also have to recognise that people who come to our country legally make a very fine contribution.
That's not its issue here. It's the processing, of those that 80% of which are rejected, and the cost to the taxpayer. on that basis.
That's why we have to get more. And that's why I think it's really important that we process in a much more efficient manner. And in fairness to the work being done by the Minister for Justice, we are seeing processing time significantly improve, because you can have a situation where, I agree with you, that someone who may not have a right to be here has been left in limbo for a long time, but also the costs are ticking up alongside that. So a much more efficient process.
So would that be something you'll handle when you're Taoiseach in the not too distant future? Because Micheál Martin wouldn't be of a like mind to you on that, would he?
Well, I think the Taoiseach and I are of a like mind on this. We're working very well in government together, and the Minister for Justice is leading for us on this. And it is. I've been very clear when I was Taoiseach. I said very clearly that the situation outside Mount Street and tents and the likes couldn't be allowed to continue. I dealt with that. And as a figure in the government now, I continue to make my views clear that we need to have a fair but firm migration system, recognising the benefits of migration, but also recognising the rules have to be applied. And I'll continue to be making that an area of policy focus.
OK, will you be around Cork today? I mean, will you be walking the streets? Will you visit the city centre? You'll see an awful lot of empty buildings. You'll see a lot of small businesses who close on a daily basis. They just can't keep it going. Many of them have been intergenerational for hundreds of years. Restaurants, pubs, clothes shops, all being unfortunately either left vacant or replaced by vape shops or Turkish barbers, astronomical rent and rates. Or will you be, as Sherry Blair said recently about Tony Blair, after his 10 years as Prime Minister and 10 years in politics, he was completely detached from reality?
Well, I certainly hope that's not me. I can assure you my family wouldn't allow me ever find myself in that situation. I'll tell you what I'm doing today. I'm meeting the Port of Cork. I'm visiting a credit union. I'm having a meeting about the National Maritime College in Cork. I'm meeting the Cork Business Association. I'm sitting down with the chief executive of Cork City Council. I'm visiting a housing development, and I'm meeting my party councillors and Oireachtas members as well in Cork. I want to have a conversation with Cork City Council specifically about a task force to regenerate, rejuvenate the city centre.
They hate that word, task force. They just say it's negative.
Well, they can call it whatever they want, but what I want to do is help. I want to help try and make sure that we can have a look at how we can take action in relation to some of the issues that you outlined, particularly in my role as finance minister, how we can help develop spaces over shops, how we can use the Living City initiative to make that more attractive. We had I appreciate I'm going to say the word again, but we had a task force in Dublin that did, I think, provide a really good roadmap for regeneration of the city. And I think the real capital might like one as well and could benefit from it too.
I know that my time is very precious at this point in time, but I want to bring up the issue of Besborough. You are probably aware that over the period since the 1920s, 923 children died at Besborough. They can only account for 64 burial records. Now private developers are being allowed, it's proposed, to build apartments on a very, very, very significant part of it, where many of the survivors and many of the parents and mothers and fathers of children born there are very upset that this should happen. Do you think this should be paused?
Being very honest, and I hope I'm not going to get in trouble for saying this, because I know this has gone through the planning process in terms of there could well be further appeals, but I feel deeply uneasy about this, is my personal view. I'm conscious this is a week in which we had a state apology for some of the horrific stains on our nation's past. I'm really conscious of the sensitivities here. Children died in the Mother and Baby Institution in Besborough. It's beyond tragic. There was a commission of investigation. I know they looked at all the issues here. They looked at burial practices. I know they tried to establish where the Besborough children were buried. There was a whole load of assessments carried out. Your listeners.
No, that's the history now, Simon, in fairness. But I'm just asking you. The Times this morning is saying that there would seem to be indications, things like coffin timber and nails have been found on the site. Surely be to God, this has to stop.
Yeah, so give me a second, and I'm not rushing off your program here. So just give me a second here, because the history matters. The point I'm making is the history matters, and I don't think the history can be ignored here in any planning application. I know there's a number of conditions attached, many, many conditions. I know there has to be forensic archaeological monitoring, but there's families here who are hurting. There is a history here that is painful. There's a trauma here. And I really, really, really think, and I'm conscious there will be further appeals here, and people have made that
clear. But you're
clear.
Doing it again. I've asked you a straight question. Do you think it should be paused?
No, but that's not the... Sorry, I can't answer that question. If you want to ask me, do I think this site should be developed for housing? I don't.
Oh, that's an answer then. So you think that means it shouldn't happen.
Question. I'm trying to answer your question, but I can't pause this because it goes through the planning process. And what I'm saying is, and I'm not going to get anybody into difficulty here, because there's been a group of people who've said very clearly they intend to appeal this matter. I'm saying I'm deeply, deeply concerned about development on this site that would cause further pain or trauma for people who have already been through significant pain and trauma.
Okay, well, if that's the case, and if you're that committed to it and that emotional about it, then why can't we just compulsorily purchase it from the developers? Just and make a park and a remembrance to those babies.
Yeah, so a couple of issues. I mean, there is a need for a memorialization at this site, and I'd be very happy for government to engage with the families here, absolutely. But I'm also conscious on the specific planning application and the law around that there has been planning granted. There will now, in all likelihood, be an appeal. We do have to allow that independent planning process run its course too.
But is it down to the survivors then and their families to do this legal process, not the state or the government?
So I think there's a couple of different points here. My understanding is that people have said they intend to appeal the planning issue. So that's either underway or going to be underway. Alongside that, the government should be engaging and will engage with the families, with the groups in relation to memorialization as well. And I think we should allow those two processes unfold.
Okay, just finally, I know you're also announcing this morning a new savings scheme. Is it like Charlie McCreevy's one back in the day, is it? The SSIA?
Not quite, but what we need to do is make sure there's 170 billion euro on deposit in Ireland. It's sitting in banks and credit unions earning diddly squat in terms of interest. We need to make sure that we use our tax system, that if you're setting aside a few bob for your kids, for your future, for yourself, and I'm not talking about the uber wealthy, they can look after themselves. I'm talking about the squeezed middle, that those accounts can work for them. And next month we'll have a forum, bring together everybody in advance of the budget to see how we can get people's savings in Ireland working for them for once and for all.
Why do you want to do that? Are you looking for that's kind of a bit of window dressing, is it, in times of negativity towards the government?
No, it's a really positive step we can take, Neil, to help the squeezed middle. If you have a bank account today, and by the way, despite the cost of living crisis, lots of people are saving in Ireland. The figures show that. But your savings are being eaten away by inflation, by dirt or anything else.
Yeah, so you could just abolish dirt, couldn't you?
You could, but I'm not sure it's the most effective way. I think a much more effective way would be to make sure that middle income people aren't locked out of investment accounts in Ireland, and that we'd allow people to have a certain amount tax free in their bank accounts for that purpose.
And what rate? What interest rate would you give them?
So I'm going to announce all of this is for budget day. But I'll tell you what
would it be? 4%, 5%, 6%?
You're good at your job, but I'm not announcing that today. But what I am telling you is this: what they've done in Sweden is allowed you to put about 27 grand in tax free. They've done in the UK about 20 grand tax free. There's a way of using the tax system here to make it work for people, but the detail of this is for budget time.
Okay, well, what I can tell you is that Charlie McCreevy, I think he was Fianna Fáil at the time, he would say if you put in 20 grand and left it there for 5 years, the government would give you an extra 5 and you'd withdraw 25. Surely that would make sense, yeah? Same thing, it worked really well.
I think it caused a lot of inflation and everybody's matured at the same time. I think a better way to do it might be actually to allow people the return that people make on their savings. Not be taxed, but let me work through the detail of that, and I'm happy to come back on when we have the scheme ready to announce.
Oh, so you're just flying a kite now, but you're not really going into the nitty gritty.
I'm doing my job. So my job here is to announce to the people of Ireland and the people of Cork this morning that we intend to change the savings and investment structure and the tax system around it.
Yeah.
To tell them that we want to talk to them in the month of March and the month of April, and to tell them that we intend to bring about changes in the budget.
Why don't you just abolish the universal social charge? That's the sneakiest, cruelest thing you ever brought in. Just get rid of it.
Because for all of the reasons that you outlined at the start of this programme, where you outlined all the need to help people who are carers, people with a disability, older people, run our public services, we can't blow a hole in the public finances here.
What are you talking about? So it's the 1.2 billion last year in asylum seeker spending, for 80% of them to be rejected, has to be looked after first before a hard-working squeeze mizzle get the universal social charge abolished. That doesn't seem fair.
I think it wouldn't be fair, but it's not true. It's not true. If you look at the facts, if you look at what we're spending on health and what we're spending on education every year, if you look at what we're spending on building homes, if you look at what we're spending on garden numbers, special needs assistance, all of that is funded from our tax base. What I want to do is make
all of those are in chaos, incidentally, including the HSE, which should be working 24/7. Actually, you should never.
Well, in fairness now to the HSE, and in fairness to people in Cork, you come visit a hospital with me. There's people working 24/7.
But when to visit Cork, a hospital University with you, hospital, all I would University smell, hospital. All I would smell is fresh paint.
Touché, Neil, but I've been in many hospitals on unannounced visits. People work extraordinarily hard in our hospitals on a 24/7 basis. There's lots of challenges in this country. I don't accept your premise, though, that there's not lots of good things that happen in our public services every single day of the week. And I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of the people who carry out that work, too.
OK, appreciate you taking the call this morning. Much obliged to you, Simon Harris.
Lovely to chat to you.
Taoiseach on Lee's side this morning. And among other things, your thoughts are welcome on that. Text 0868104106. I have to say, I'm not blowing smoke anywhere, but at least I had an opportunity to talk to the Taoiseach. Maybe that might mean that it augurs well for perhaps at some stage in the future, perhaps a conversation on air with the Taoiseach. You'd never know.
Listen to the Neil Prendeville Show wherever you go. Download the Go Loud app, the new home of Red FM.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.